Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records, an hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s with yours truly, Glenn Robison. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone and by everyone from Aronson to Zerky. This is a very special edition of the show for a couple of reasons. The first is that it's our 14th anniversary show. We debuted here on KISL in late July of 2000 and have been here ever since. I'm very proud and happy to have the longest-running show on KISL and look forward to many more years. The other reason this is a special show I'll explain a little later, but first, Abe Brigode is going to get this 14th anniversary show started, and how.
Thank you.
Well, there's a triple R debut for that record and that band, the Blue Ridge Highballers, led by Charlie LaPrade with 14 Days in Georgia. Charlie Washington LaPrade was born on November 17, 1888, in Franklin County, Virginia. Most of his first 30 years were spent in the Spray, North Carolina area, after which he moved to Danville, Virginia. Charlie started playing stringed instruments as a boy and actually had some formal musical training from a Swedish violinist. The Blue Ridge Highballers were formed in the mid-20s with Lonnie Griffith on guitar and Arthur Wells on the banjo. The group cut 16 sides for Columbia on March 23rd and 24th of 1926, 14 of which were released, including 14 Days in Virginia. The following year, LaPrade added John Thomason on fiddle, Louis B. Adams on guitar, and Liege Hardy on banjo, and recorded four sides for Paramount Records. Charlie LaPrade was still an active fiddler when he died on April 24, 1958. I might just be playing that record again in a couple of years because it's also known as 16 Days in Georgia. Before that, it was Hum and Strum, written by Elmer Schobel and Billy Myers and recorded March 3, 1928. The band was led by Charles Cook, who also wrote the arrangement. So what does Hum and Strum have to do with our 14th anniversary? Well, the band was Doc Cook and his 14 Doctors of Syncopation. Charles Doc Cook was born in Louisville, Kentucky on September 3, 1891, and really was a doctor, one of the first to receive a doctorate from the American Conservatory of Chicago. We started off this 14th anniversary show with a quintessential 20s tune, Yes Sir, That's My Baby, from April 30, 1925. Walter Donaldson wrote the music and Gus Kahn the lyrics. The band there was directed by Ace Burgode, who was born Athos C. Burgode on January 5, 1893 in Illinois. So once again, what does that have to do with our 14th anniversary? Well, the band there was Ace Burgode and his 14 Virginians, even though the group varied from 10 to 19 musicians. I'm Glenn Robison, and you're listening to Rapidly Rotating Records, bringing you vintage music to which you can't not tap your toes, from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s. The second reason that this is a special edition of Rapidly Rotating Records is that the rest of this show is dedicated to my father, Lieutenant Colonel Frank Bryant Robison, who passed away July 9th, just short of his 96th birthday. He had an unusual start in life, but that didn't keep him from becoming a World War II hero and having a successful business career, which was also a bit out of the ordinary. I'd like to share a little bit of information about him, interspersed with some records, and I hope you'll find it interesting, if not inspiring. I'm going to start off by playing a piano solo by Jelly Roll Morton. Thank you. That was Jelly Roll Morton and a piano solo recorded in New York on December 6, 1928 of his composition, Seattle Hunch. I played that because in 1920, Morton stopped off to play in the area of Jackson Street and 12th Avenue in Seattle, which had a lively jazz scene, and he wrote Seattle Hunch to commemorate his visit. The 2-year-old infant who had become my father was living in Seattle at the time, about 6 miles away from the jazz district. He was born around August 1, 1918, and I mentioned he had an unusual start in life because he was abandoned as a newborn and left in a basket on the doorstep of a Seattle hospital. Fortunately for him, he was found by Esther Hopkins Lang, a nurse at the hospital. Tenny Robison took him home, and she and her husband Garland Robison adopted him and became his parents. He never knew who his birth parents were. Garland was a restaurant cook, and apart from that beginning, Frank had a normal childhood in Seattle. It was punctuated by a big public event in 1927, and this next record will give a clue as to what that was.
Out of the west, for your big test, unknown, undone, you flew. Like an angel in flight, you flew through the night, with a whole world praying for you. While you were flying high in the sky, you flew into the heart of the world. While we were praying, we knew you'd come through. Now the flag of your victory's unfurled. The spirit of youth carried you on, and a mother's prayer did its part. With God on his throne, leading you across the foam, like an angel you flew into everyone's heart. All alone in the race with death, through the cold and sleet you carried on. Without a buddy or word of cheer, you brave the danger alone. Great is the ride of Paul Revere. Your name goes down in history, Lindbergh. A hero to do and dare. Dauntless, fearless, victorious. And while you were flying high in the sky, you flew into the heart of the world. While we were praying, we knew you'd come through. Now the flag of your victory is unfurled. The spirit of youth carried you on, and a mother's prayer did its part. With God on his throne, leading you across the foam, like an angel you flew into everyone's heart.
Recorded just 4 days after Charles Lindbergh landed at Le Bourget Field in Paris, from March 25th, 1927, that was Vaughn DeLeith with Nat Shilkret directing the orchestra, on Like an Angel You Flew Into Everyone's Heart. Jimmy McHugh wrote the tune, and Harry A. Stone and John McLaughlin wrote the words. A few months later, on September 13th and 14th, Lindbergh visited Seattle, and my dad, who had just turned 9 years old, was in the crowds along the route of the ticker tape-style parade, and was one of thousands of school children who gathered in Volunteer Park to see the famous aviator. I have to wonder just how much of a direct effect seeing Lindbergh had on my dad's career choice. In 1930, in the midst of the Great Depression, Garland and Tenny were struggling to the point where they decided it would be best to send Frank to live with Tenny's sister Benny and her husband Duncan Wing, who was in the Army and would be better able to take care of now 12-year-old Frank. Uncle Duncan was a veteran of the Boxer Rebellion, served in the Philippines, and during World War I commanded a prison camp in Georgia. He received new transfer orders shortly after my dad went to live with Aunt Benny and Uncle Duncan, and this next record will tell you where they went. With Sharky Bonanno on cornet and Sidney Arredon on clarinet, that was Johnny Miller's New Orleans Frolickers, recording in New Orleans on April 29, 1928, and Panama. That record was recorded just a couple of years before Uncle Duncan, Aunt Benny, and my dad boarded an Army transport ship in San Francisco and left for Fort Amador in the Panama Canal Zone. They spent a year there before being transferred again, this time to West Point, New York, again aboard an Army transport ship. In the meantime, Garland and Tenney were still struggling in Seattle. Garland had moved to Seattle from west of Hope, Arkansas, where he had been born on the old Robison farm on May 17, 1884. He managed to keep working as a cook until about 1931, when he is listed as an unemployed laborer, and there was another major event, which Billy Murray will help introduce.
Jones and a pretty little queen took a ride one day in his big limousine. The car kicked up and the engine wouldn't crank. There wasn't any gas in the gasoline tank. Just about that time along came Nord, and he rambled right along in his little old Ford. He stole that queen as his engine sang a song, and his little old Ford just rambled right along. His little old Ford, it rambled right along. The little old Ford, it rambled right along. The gas burned out in the big machine, but the darned little Ford don't need gasoline. The big limousine had to back downhill. The blamed little Ford is going up still. When she blows out a tire, just wrap it up with wire, and the little Ford will ramble right along. Now they ran over glass and they ran over nails. They ran over pigs and puppy dog tails. They spotted a cop and shot out of sight. They rambled all day and they rambled all night. They smashed up fences and telegraph poles. They bumped into ditches and deep shut holes. They bumped into a preacher and the preacher took a ride. And the Ford rambled on with Johnny and his bride. The little old Ford, it rambled right along. The little old Ford, it rambled right along. He swung around the corner and he bumped into a mule. And the darned old jackass kicked like a fool. He kicked and he kicked and he kicked the wheel. But he had to quit kicking to save his heel. When it runs out of dope, just fill it up with soap and the little Ford will ramble right along. You can smash the top and smash up the seat. Twist it out of shape till both ends meet. Smash the body and rip out the gear. Smash up the front and smash up the rear. Smash up the fender and rip off the tires. Smash up the lamps and cut out the wires. Throw in the clutch and then forget the juice. And the little old Ford will go to beat the juice. The little old Ford, it rambled right along. The little old Ford rambled right along. Now cut that out, you naughty tease. Tis a left-hand drive and a right-hand squeeze. Patch it up with a piece of string, spearmint gum, or any old thing. When the power gets thick, just hit it with a brick, and the little Ford will ramble right along.
That was Billy Murray on March 3, 1915, and according to the sheet music, the greatest comedy song sensation, The Little Ford Rambled Right Along, written by Byron Gay and C.R. Foster. That song refers, of course, to the Ford Model T, which was produced from 1908 to 1925. In 1931, Garland and Tenney were finally forced to leave Seattle, so they loaded what they could in a Model T and drove back to the Robison family farm in Hope, Arkansas. I don't know how old that Model T was. It had to be at least 6 years old, and I can only imagine what an arduous journey that was.
This is KISL-FM 88.7 Avalon, and you're listening to Glenn Robison's Rapidly Rotating Records, toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s.
In 1933, Uncle Duncan, Aunt Benny, and Frank drove from New York to Hope, Arkansas, where Frank was reunited with his parents. An article in the June 13, 1933 Hope Star newspaper says that Mr. and Mrs. Garland Robison entertained a lively crowd with an Easter egg hunt and basket luncheon, and that despite the threatening weather, everyone enjoyed the occasion. In 1935, Frank graduated from high school in Hope, Arkansas, and enrolled in Southwestern Junior College in Keene, Texas, south of Dallas. And after graduating from Southwestern, he went to Union College in Lincoln, Nebraska. He put himself through school, and this next record will help explain just how he did that. Thank you.
Borrow some if you haven't any. Buy yourself a new broom. Sweep the blues away. Spend a half a dollar. If you don't, you're a horse's collar. Tidy up that blue room and keep the blues away. Unless I miss my guess, happiness doesn't hide around corners. Get wise, use your eyes. Maybe you'll get a pleasant surprise. Change that hard luck story. Everything will be hunky-dory. Get yourself a new broom and sweep the blues away.
Duke Ellington and his famous orchestra, May 9th, 1933, and Get Yourself a New Broom and Sweep the Blues Away. The vocal refrain urging you to get a new broom was by Ivy Anderson, and if you heeded her advice, at least between 1935 and 39, the broom you bought might have been made by Frank Robison. Both Southwestern Junior College and Union College had broom factories in which my dad worked to put himself through school. It was during this time in Lincoln that he also developed a passion for photography. He didn't quite graduate from Union College because he could see that the U.S. was going to get involved in the war, and rather than wait and get drafted, he decided to enlist. In October of 1941, he joined the Army Air Corps in Lincoln, Nebraska, and was in flight training school in San Antonio, Texas, when Pearl Harbor was bombed. He received more flight training in Oklahoma, Texas, and Florida, and in 1942 was a second lieutenant in the Army Air Corps, flying P-39 and P-40 fighter planes. He was sent to Panama to help protect the Canal Zone, after which he spent a few months in Ecuador, still flying fighters. He was sent back to the States, where he became a flight instructor at Meridian, Mississippi, but he wanted to go into combat. Combining his flying and photography skills, he was sent to Europe with the 67th Tactical Reconnaissance Group, of the 9th Air Force, stationed in Normandy and later Paris. Flying the P-51D Mustang, he completed 84 combat reconnaissance missions in support of General Courtney Hodges' 1st Army, including 2 kills to his credit. Right after this next record, a list is awards. Here's Dinah Shore.
Although some people say he's just a crazy guy, to me he means a million other things. For he's the one who taught this happy heart of mine to fly. He wears a pair of silver wings. And though it's pretty tough, the job he does above, I wouldn't have him change it for a king. An ordinary fellow in the uniform I love, he wears a pair of silver wings. I'm so full of pride when we go walking. Every time he's home on leave, with those wings on his tunic, me with my heart on my sleeve. But when I'm left alone and we are far apart, I sometimes wonder what tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of silver full of pride when we go walking. Every time he's home on leave, he with those wings on his tunic, me with my heart on my sleeve. But when I'm left alone and we are far apart, I sometimes wonder what tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of
For his accomplishments during the war, my dad was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, the Air Medal with one bronze and three silver clusters, and the Croix de Guerre with silver star. His campaign medals include the World War II Victory Medal, American Defense Service Medal, American Campaign Medal, the Europe East Africa Middle East Campaign Medal, and the Army of Occupation Medal. At the end of the war in Europe on May 7, 1945, his squadron was selected to be sent to the war in the Pacific for the proposed invasion of Japan, but that became unnecessary with the surrender of Japan following the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Returning to the States, now Major Frank Robison was stationed in Virginia, Florida, and Fort Bliss, Texas, before being assigned as a staff officer at the Pentagon. It was there where he met Dorothea Mathers from Boston, who was working as a secretary. They were married in 1946, I came along in 1949, and the following year he was transferred to Wright-Patterson Field in Dayton, Ohio, where he developed and tested equipment in the Photographic Flight Test Division. In 1950, he was transferred to Norton Air Force Base in San Bernardino, where he inspected aviation photo systems. In 1953, after serving 11 years, 2 months, and 10 days, he left the United States Air Force as a lieutenant colonel in order to start his own business. And this next record will give you a clue as to what that was.
Thank you.
He's credited on the label of that Columbia 78 as Vincent Van Tool, but you may recognize the voice as that of Irving Kaufman with Don Voorhees and his orchestra on September 6, 1927 with Highways Are Happy Ways. You'll find out why I picked that record in just a minute. Using his aviation and aerial photography skills from the Air Force, following his separation from the service in 1953, my dad formed his own company, Pictorial Crafts Incorporated, which was a pioneer in aerial photography and photogrammetry, and became very successful. At first, things were slow, and he resorted to taking photographs first and then trying to sell them. After flying over Knott's Berry Farm and taking an aerial photograph of the park, he was able to get a meeting with Walter Knott himself and sold him a large print of the picture. From there, he was hired to do the aerial surveying for Disneyland, which opened in 1955. In 1956, the interstate highway system was begun, and the firm, now with two planes and six employees, was busy working for the California Division of Highways, now Caltrans, which regarded the company's work very highly. Hence the record of Highways Are Happy Ways. The firm also worked for the Division of Forestry, providing aerial photographs used in fighting forest fires and assessing damage. Other jobs included the Oroville Dam, Feather River Project, and the Coronado Bridge. Photographs were taken using wheeled RC-8 and RC-10 cameras manufactured in Switzerland and mounted in the floor of the plane where the passenger seats would have been. The cameras produced 9-inch square negatives on roll film in a motorized magazine which could take hundreds of exposures before having to be switched out. In order to produce accurate photographs, the plane had to be kept at constant speed, altitude, and direction and required a highly skilled pilot. In 1965, a new company, Pictorial Sciences, was formed, which used helicopters instead of planes and could produce topographic maps. My dad was able to receive a patent for a camera mount, which isolated the camera from the vibration of the helicopter. After more than 30 years, Frank sold the business and retired, but didn't slow down. And this next record will give you a clue as to what he did.
Thank you.
Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra in 1942 and Arkansas Traveler. I played that because, following his retirement, Frank stayed physically active and was able to travel extensively, documenting his adventures in beautiful dye-transfer color photographs, which he printed himself. In 1993, at age 75, he took part in a scientific research expedition to Bolivia's highest peak, Nevado Sahama, outpacing most who were younger than he was. In 1994, my mother Dorothea passed away, but in 2000, much to the surprise of the family, he married Connie Soule, and they too traveled the world. Connie's large family is wonderful and immediately embraced my dad and everyone in our family as well. Since moving to a retirement community in 2008, Frank and Connie enjoyed spending time with family and friends, especially annual summer family reunions at Hermosa Beach. Lieutenant Colonel Frank Bryant Robison passed away peacefully at 8:20 p.m. on July 9, 2014, at home, surrounded by family, singing and holding his hands. I'm proud to be his son. Following two memorial services, he was laid to rest at Riverside National Cemetery in a very moving commitment service, with full military honors, a 21-gun salute, playing of taps, and a flyover by a P-51D Mustang, the same type of plane he flew in the war. It was generously provided by the Planes of Fame in Chino, California. Please visit their website at www.planesoffame.org. If you have never seen Albert Brooks' 1991 film Defending Your Life, I urge you to seek it out. It's a wonderful film, and without giving away too much, if that's what actually happens in the afterlife, my dad will have no trouble whatsoever advancing. We've got time for at least a couple more records, and I'll announce those now and just let them play out. My parents had planned to retire to Hawaii. That would have been nice, but things didn't quite work out that way. My dad did make quite a few trips to the islands, both for work and with my mother and with Connie. So we're going to hear Gus C. Edwards' version of I'll Fly to Hawaii, recorded on August 31, 1926. I'll Fly to Hawaii was written by Ira Shuster and Lou Davis, and the vocal trio is Rick Adkins, Eddie Copeland, and Joe Falve. Next, we'll hear Joe Loss and his band, and Wish Me Luck As You Wave Me Goodbye, recorded in London on October 11, 1939. Wish Me Luck was written by Phil Park and Harry Parr Davies. And we'll finish up with Alvino Ray and his orchestra and the official song of the Army Air Corps, the Army Air Corps Song, recorded in Hollywood on January 27, 1942. I'm Glenn Robison, and you've been listening to Rapidly Rotating Records. I hope you'll click in or tune in again next week, and I thank you for indulging me this audio tribute to my father, and as always, for your very kind attention. Thank you.
as you wave me goodbye. Cheerio, here I go on my way. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. With a cheer, not a tear, make it gay. Give me a smile I can keep all the while in my heart while I'm away. Till we meet once again, you and I. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye.
Spouting a flame from under, off with one terrible roar. We live in fame or go down in flame,
boy, nothing can stop the Army Air Corps.
Keep the wings level and true. If you live to be a gray-haired wonder, keep the nose out of the blue. Flying men guarding a nation's border, we'll be there followed by more. In echelon, we carry on.
Why, nothing will stop the Army Air Corps.